Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to tackle some really complex research, pull out the key insights, and basically give you the knowledge you need.
That's right.
Today, we're going, well, pretty deep. Beyond basic stats into mathematical physics, really, high-level geometry.
Yeah, definitely. We're looking at a very specialized paper today. It's all about how paths, specifically time-minimizing paths, behave in these, well, messy random environments.
Patterns in time on a grid, essentially.
Essentially, yes. The paper's title gives it away: Buseman Functions in Infinite Geodesics in Two-Dimensional First Passage Percolation. Sounds like a mouthful, I know.
It does a bit.
But the goal is fundamental. It's about proving rigorously the structure, the direction of paths that are always the fastest possible route between points. And importantly, they did this under really minimal statistical assumptions, the weakest possible, really.
Okay, let's unpack that first bit then. First passage percolation, FPP. Sounds super technical, but you mentioned some analogies before, like fluid flow.
Exactly. Think of FPP as a mathematical way to model finding the quickest path through a landscape that's, well, randomized and messy. Imagine a huge infinite grid like graph paper stretching out forever, a 2D lattice.
Right, like a city map, maybe?
Sort of, but the key is randomness. Every connection, every street or edge on that grid has a random weight. Think of it as the time it takes to cross that specific edge. It might be quick, it might be slow, it's random.
So if I want to get from point A over here to point B way over there, I can't just take the straightest path. I need to find the route where the sum of all those random edge times is the absolute minimum.
Precisely. The total passage time, often called tau, tau y, is the minimum cumulative weight you can rack up along any path between x and y. You're always hunting for the speediest route.
And that speediest route, that's the geodesic you mentioned.
That's the one. The minimum time path is the geodesic. Now, since we're on an infinite grid, what we're really interested in for this deep dive anyway are paths that start somewhere, maybe the origin, and just go on forever, always staying time minimal. These are the infinite geodesics.
Got it. Now, you said earlier work on these infinite paths needed strong assumptions. What kinds of things did they have to assume? Why was that?
Well, it really came down to the mathematical tools they had. Earlier research, people like Newman and his collaborators needed things to be quite well behaved. They often had to assume things like global curvature conditions on the overall shape the paths trace out.
Meaning the reachable area had to be nicely rounded.
Yeah, essentially. And also strong moment bounds on the edge weights. Basically, the randomness couldn't be too wild. It had to be sort of constrained.
And the problem with strong assumptions is.
You only prove your result holds in a very specific, maybe idealized situation. The real challenge has always been, do these paths still exist? Do they still behave predictably when the system is much noisier, much more chaotic, closer to, reality?
Okay, so that brings us to the breakthrough in this paper, minimizing those assumptions. What did they manage to relax? What are the new ground rules?
They took a big step back. They showed their results hold, even if the passage times aren't perfectly independent everywhere. They only need either that the times are independent and identically distributed, that's assumption A1, still quite standard, or, and this is the really minimal one, A2, that the times are merely translation ergodic and symmetric.
Translation ergodic. Okay,
Okay.
break that down. Does that just mean statistically homogeneous? Like the average randomness looks the same everywhere on the grid, even if nearby edges have slightly correlated travel times?
That's a great way to put it. Yes. The statistical properties are the same no matter where you look on the infinite grid. You don't need that strict independence between every single edge weight anymore. That's a huge generalization.
But making things more general usually makes them harder to prove. What was the big technical hurdle here?
Ah, yes. The major obstacle, the one that stumped people for a long time, is proving the existence of the limit of something called the Buseman function.
Right, you mentioned that. Let's define that simply first. What is a Buseman function measuring?
Conceptually, it's like a measure of relative advantage or head start. Imagine you have two points, X and Y, on the grid, and you're looking at the travel time from each of them to some very distant point, or maybe a distance set S. The Buseman function, BSXY ad lite A, is basically the difference in their travel times, tau X, S, tau A.
So it tells me how much time point X saved compared to point Y when traveling towards that far-off destination S.
Exactly. It's the discrepancy in their arrival times if they were racing towards S. Now, the classical approach to studying infinite geodesics relied heavily on showing that as this destination S goes infinitely far away in some direction.
That time difference, that discrepancy, settles down to a single fixed non-random number, a perfect limit.
Yes. And that's the killer problem. Proving that limit exists and is non-random is incredibly difficult under these weak assumptions. The randomness along the paths just makes it really hard to show things converge perfectly. It's a major open problem and was blocking progress.
So they hit a wall, they couldn't prove the limit exists. How did they get around it? This sounds like where the new technique comes in.
It is. This is the core innovation. Instead of trying to prove that the Buseman function converges to a specific value, they shifted focus. They started analyzing the statistical distribution of the Buseman function values across the entire grid as the target S moves to infinity. They looked at the distributional limits.
Okay, so forget the exact number. Instead, figure out the probability profile. Like, what's the chance the time difference is this much or that much, and does that probability pattern stabilize?
That's precisely it. They show that this distribution converges to a well-defined limit distribution. And then, crucially, by combining this with the translation invariance property that statistical homogeneity we talked about, they could prove their main theorems about geodesics without ever needing the pointwise non-random limit of the Buseman function itself.
Wow, okay. That's clever. A very neat mathematical workaround.
It really is. It sidesteps the biggest roadblock in the field for decades.
All right. So armed with this new tool, let's look at what they proved. What about the big picture, the macro level behavior? You mentioned a limit shape.
Right. So if you start at the origin and let time tick forward, say, to time $2, you can ask, which points on the grid can I reach within that time? The set of all reachable points, as Talalay gets large, grows. And the shape theorem tells us that when scaled by $2, this set converges to a deterministic, compact, convex shape. It's called dollars.
So the randomness averages out on the large scale to form a predictable shape. And the shape of this reachable region is key.
Absolutely critical. The geometry of this limit shape of doll tells us a lot about how those infinite geodesics behave.
Which brings us to the question of direction. Do these infinite paths just wander off randomly, or do they pick a direction and stick to it?
They're actually quite directed. The paper has some strong results here. Theorem 1.1 gives us directional existence. It says if the boundary of the limit shape, partial B dole, is differentiable at a certain point, meaning it's smooth, like a well-rounded curve with a unique tangent line there, then any infinite geodesic that heads towards that smooth part of the boundary must eventually travel within a specific narrow angular sector. Its direction gets confined.
So smooth boundary means a tight leash on the path's direction. No sharp corners on the limit shape means no sudden unpredictable turns for the fastest paths heading that way.
Exactly. And they refine this even more with corollary 1.2. Mm-hmm. If that point of differentiability is also an exposed point, meaning the tangent line touches the boundary only at that single point, it doesn't lie flat along an edge.
Okay, like a proper corner, but smooth.
Sort of, yes. Or the outermost point in some direction. If you have that, then the geodesic heading that way doesn't just stay in a sector. It converges to a single unique asymptotic direction, a specific angle, theta.
Is that common? Do we know shapes where that happens?
Yeah, there are examples. In a related model, directed percolation, it's known that the point corresponding to the direction pi 4.3, like 45 degrees, is an exposed point of differentiability. So for that model, you're guaranteed a geodesic heading exactly in that direction.
Interesting. What about overall shape? You mentioned global curvature earlier.
Yes, theorem 1.6 tackles that under slightly stronger, but still minimal, assumptions. They call them A1 or A2, involving unique passage times. If you have those, and if the entire limit shape by doll is a uniformly positive curvature.
Meaning it's perfectly rounded everywhere, no flat spots at all, like a perfect ellipse maybe.
Exactly. No flat segments on the boundary anywhere. If that holds, then the conclusion is very strong. Every infinite geodesic, starting from any point, is guaranteed to have a well-defined asymptotic direction. This confirms a kind of universal directional stability if the shape is nicely curved. And again, proving this under such weak conditions was a big step.
Okay, so paths exist, they have direction, often a very specific one dictated by the limit shape. What about how they interact with each other? That brings us to coalescence.
Right. This comes directly from the new Buseman function framework. Coalescence is about whether different geodesics eventually merge.
Define coalescence for us.
Simple idea. Take two infinite geodesics, Kavli 50 deriers, starting from two different points, X and Y. We say they coalesce if eventually they merge into a single path and never split apart again.
Yeah.
Technically, there's symmetric difference. The set of edges that belong to one path but not the other is finite.
So they might travel separately for a while, but eventually they meet up and stick together forever.
That's the picture. And theorem 1.11, the coalescence result, shows that under these minimal assumptions, plus a technical condition called the upward finite energy property in one case, you can indeed find a whole collection of infinite geodesics, one starting from every point X in the lattice, such that all pairs of these paths coalesce almost surely.
Wow. So it's like a river system. Lots of streams starting everywhere, but they all eventually merge into larger rivers, and those rivers don't split back into streams.
That's a perfect analogy. A directed forest structure, branches merging into trunks, but trunks never splitting backwards.
Okay, this never splitting backwards seems important. You mentioned this links directly to physics and something called bigeodesics.
Absolutely. This is where it gets really interesting, connecting pure math to statistical physics. Bigeodesics are paths that are infinite in both directions. They stretch from negative infinity to positive infinity, indexed by all integers math bz, and are time minimizing along their entire length.
Doubly infinite fastest paths. Why are physicists interested in those?
Because their existence, or non-existence in FPP, is conjectured to be equivalent to the properties of ground states, the lowest energy states in certain physical models. Specifically, disordered ferromagnetic spin models.
Yeah.
Like the disordered Ising model.
Okay, the Ising model, that's the one with spins on a lattice pointing up or down, right? Trying to align with their neighbor.
That's the one. In a simple ferromagnet, the ground states are usually trivial.
Mm-hmm.
Either all spins are up, plus one everywhere, or all spins are down, magnet one everywhere. Those are always the lowest energy states. But in disordered models where the interactions between spins are random, you could potentially have more complicated ground states. Maybe a state where half the system has spin up, half has spin down, separated by some kind of boundary or domain wall.
Ah, and a bigeodesic in the FPP model would correspond to that domain wall.
Precisely. If a bigeodesic exists in FPP, it provides the mathematical structure for such a non-constant ground state in the related spin model. Proving or disproving the existence of bigeodesics is directly tied to understanding whether these complex, non-constant ground states can actually exist in these disordered physical systems.
And the physics intuition, especially in two dimensions, is that such complex ground states shouldn't exist. They expect the ground state to be unique, up to flipping all spins.
That's the prevailing conjecture, yes. Uniqueness of the ground state. So mathematicians working on FPP are often motivated by trying to prove that bigeodesics don't exist, which would support that physics conjecture.
So what did this paper, with its new Boozman framework, conclude about bigeodesics? Did it find them or rule them out?
Well, the structure that their method naturally produces, this coalescing forest of forward-directed geodesics, is fundamentally incompatible with bigeodesics. Their analysis, specifically Theorem 6.9, demonstrates the absence of backward infinite paths.
Meaning, if you try to follow any path in their constructed forest backwards from infinity,
it eventually terminates. It doesn't stretch back to negative infinity. The flow is inherently one way, outwards from finite regions.
So the mathematical machinery they built, based on these distributional limits of Boozman functions, generates a universe of paths where bigeodesics simply don't fit. It fails to produce them.
Exactly. The method itself confirms this forward-directed structure, ruling out the doubly infinite paths that would correspond to those non-constant ground states in the spin model, at least via this specific construction.
That's really fascinating. So let's recap the achievement here. This deep dive really highlighted how a completely new mathematical technique looking at the statistical distribution of these time discrepancies, instead of demanding a single fixed limit, allowed mathematicians to, well, leapfrog a major decades-old hurdle in first passage percolation.
Right. And by doing that, they managed to prove fundamental results about infinite paths, their existence, their directionality, their coalescence under the weakest, most realistic assumptions to date. It firms up our understanding of the geometric stability lurking within these chaotic random systems.
It confirms that even with minimal rules, these optimal paths behave in quite structured ways. They find directions, they stick together.
Definitely. It strengthens the picture of FPP as having this inherent large-scale order emerging from microscopic randomness.
And yet, while this powerful method ruled out bigeodesics within its framework, the overall big question, do bigeodesics exist at all in 2D FPP, that still technically remains open, doesn't it, driving further research?
That's the perfect provocative thought to end on. Yes. This work strongly suggests they don't exist by showing the natural structure seems incompatible with them. But a formal proof ruling them out entirely under the most general conditions is still elusive. the hunt continues, perhaps needing even newer ideas or techniques. And of course, extending any of this to three dimensions, well, that's a whole other world of complexity.
A fantastic journey through some really complex mathematical territory. Thanks for navigating us through it.
My pleasure. It's fascinating stuff.
Indeed. Until next time on The Deep Dive, keep digging deeper.